It's on this Reddit podcast. Back out to Smart. Fakes the pass all the time. Three. Bang! Hits William Screen. Bobs it up to Robert Williams. Should he go? Jaylen Brown. Tatum. Durant, the long reach. Tatum crossover, pull up jumper. It's good. 50 points for Jason Tatum.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit podcast. Ben Vallis here. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. It's our 200th episode, and that means we've got a very, very special guest. He was on our 100th episode, actually. It's Lee Ellis of the No Dunks podcast, formerly the Starters, formerly the Basketball Jones. Lee came on to talk about that wild Bucks series, the upcoming conference finals against the Heat, and a bunch of other stuff. So I'm going to stop blabbing here and let's get into it. All right, we're here with Lee Ellis of the Athletics No Dunks podcast, the GOAT Aussie Hoops podcaster. Lee, thanks for coming on. How are you, mate?
Very good, guys. Thanks very much for having me back for the double century. I didn't think I'd get there, but well done, guys. It's a great effort by you to stick at it and to keep at it. So I'm happy to come back every 100 episodes.
I appreciate it. We'll hold you to that for the triple ton, the 300th episode there. Look, we're going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals shortly, but us Celtics fans, like, we need to bask in the glow of the Bucks series win just a little bit longer. Lee, like, I was honestly 50-50 going into this Bucks series, even knowing that they were missing Middleton. What were your expectations going into this series, and then how did it all play out, I guess, like, based on those expectations?
Well, it definitely tilted it in Boston's favor when Middleton was out. I picked Boston to win it. They were at home. They just had obliterated Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets. But I always think that in any series, the best player tends to be the team that is going to win the series. And Giannis, I think, is the best player out of this series. But as we saw in game one as well, he was incredible. I mean, he dominated without sort of having to go for, like we saw in these last couple of games, where he's putting up 40 and 20 and things like that. And it felt like after game one, it's like, okay, the Bucks can probably do this as long as they get those continual contributions from their role players. But as the series went on, and even in, you know, especially after game five, which they won in Boston, the Bucks didn't quite get those numbers. I mean, Drew Holiday was good without being great, but you were relying on guys like a Pat Connaughton and Bobby Portis, and the Bucks just couldn't perform to the level that the Celtics, you know, role players could. And Grant Williams, I think, is just the best example of that. I mean, he had a very big role in this series defending Giannis a lot of the time, and then basically said, hey, get into the corner. We're going to fire the ball. You shoot those threes. And he did a really, really good job of that. So, you know, Boston, there's no asterisk or anything like that, that because Chris Middleton wasn't playing. If he plays, maybe the Bucks win. Who knows? No one really knows the outcome of these things. But the thing is, Boston stepped up. And I think you look at Jason Tatum, I think they won this series in game six, because when the series was on the line there, the Bucks had a double-digit lead in game six. Jason Tatum put on one of the most incredible performances. I think he finished with 46 there, but it was more the way that Tatum was like, all right, this is stardom time right now. And he went out and did that, and he was just incredible. Everyone on that Celtics team kind of, in the wins, had a different contributor. You know, it was like Al Horford had a big game for them there. And I've blanked a little bit here, but Jason Tatum, of course, game six. Grant Williams there in game seven. And I'm trying to think of game, what game was it? Game two, I guess, was Jaylen Brown who did it there for the Celtics. So, you know, I think that's really the difference here. The Bucks needed Giannis to be huge, and he was. But they just didn't have that other guy step up. So this was an incredible series. This should have been the conference finals for me. It's disappointing that it wasn't. Milwaukee had a chance to win. They couldn't. Boston had several chances, and eventually they did. And you could sort of tell at halftime, I think, yesterday, that it was going to take a huge effort from the Bucks to get back in. You just wondered where that offense was going to come from. And once I think they hit like three or four threes in the first probably 90 seconds to 2 minutes of that second half, It was out of reach by then, and Milwaukee, you just couldn't sense a really big comeback. So, you know, fantastic series, very deserving victory by the Boston Celtics, because again, with or without Chris Middleton, they still had to take down Giannis, who put up, I think, a historically, statistically high series. So it's just a bummer that series doesn't now automatically take you into the NBA Finals. You've got to get past the Miami Heat. It will be tough for the Celtics, but ultimately that was a great series, lived up to the hype.
Yeah, and it's really turned out to look like a potential just poetic run that we could be enjoying here. I mean, so far so good, and we've obviously got a big series to look forward to. But thinking about and reflecting on, you know, this past Bucks series here. Is there a Celtics player that maybe you weren't as aware of or just as savvy to, and then has kind of jumped onto your radar after this series and is now someone you're taking a closer look at and paying attention to?
Well, I guess you've got to go deeper. Peyton Pritchard got more minutes than I thought he was going to get. I thought he would be a sort of breaking case of emergency type of guy or garbage time, but he actually played some pretty good minutes, hit some good threes, and look, he just went out there and fought and scrapped. And I think, again, that's the mentality that all the Celtics players have is, you know, defensively, that's where the games are really won, because Smart, obviously, as the defensive player of the year, we know that's where he likes to make his mark there. Jason Tatum, he's been an improved defender. Al Horford's been one of the most underrated defenders his entire career. And then you got Jaylen Brown. And of course, Robert Williams, who missed most of this series. He didn't even, you know, he didn't play yesterday. He was available, but he obviously didn't get out there. I think my suspicion is they probably wanted to try to avoid playing him yesterday in case he was to do any more damage, steal an extra day or two of rest there before he goes up against the Heat, because he's going to have a big role in that series. So, but no one really, you know, again, none of those guys who played, like even Daniel Tice, I mean, he's been there before. He understands, like, you're never really in Ime Udoka's doghouse for long. Maybe you are for a game or two, but if he needs you to go out there and play well, he expects you to be ready, and I think that's the mentality there of the Celtics. So I just kind of thought, wow, Pritchard's getting some heavy minutes here, but, well, you know, heavy minutes relatively speaking, but he also understands if you're out there, they expect you to shoot if you're open and try to create something, and that's a very, very important thing, because if you look at, say, a Grayson Allen there for the Bucks, or a Pat Connaughton even, those guys at times weren't sure if they should be shooting or not, if they're out there just to scrap and fight, and I think that's the difference here is the Celtics really trusted everybody to go out there and perform. And so, you know, Peyton Pritchard, again, he's going to get minutes in against the Heat too. There's no doubt about it for my mind, because there's a lot of guys in a similar sort of situation there for him. Maybe Duncan Robinson plays, you know, Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, those sort of guys as well. He's going to have to go out there and make those guys work when he plays. So, you know, a very impressive series, again, from a guy who you thought maybe he's only going to play a handful of minutes at most.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us a sense, like, from the neutral standpoint, Lee, you know, we are, you know, 100 episodes ago, we tried to convince you to be a Celtics fan. We are going to try again a little bit later. But, like, the general consensus is that the Bucks need all of Giannis, Middleton, and Drew Holiday to contend. So how is it that the Celtics can be considered contenders with only Tatum and Brown as those sort of top echelon players, and not even at that Giannis level?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, I think Giannis is the best player. I think he's the best player in the league. I mean, he was my pick for MVP because he's just so incredibly dominant at both ends. But I think the key here for the Celtics is look what they did to Kevin Durant in that first round, because Kevin Durant, you know, maybe he's the best player. He probably is the best player out of those two series. But I thought their defense on him was incredible, because I've never seen Kevin Durant rushed like he was against the Celtics, where he was like, every single time he had the ball, he knew he was either having Brown or Smart or Tatum or someone. Most of the time it was two guys, and most of the time they were diving on the ball when he was dribbling it. So he knew he had to rush to get to his spot. And then when he raised up, he had two or three guys in his face all the time. So the Celtics understand that everybody out there plays defense. I've already mentioned Al Horford. I saw him up close here when he played for the Hawks. Al Horford has maintained an incredible level of defensive IQ, and that's on display as well, because he's not a big guy physically, even athletically, but he just understands how to get guys out of their position, to be defensive around the rim, how to sort of turn away those shots and just be in the right spot. And then on the offensive end, Al Horford had an incredible series, spreading the floor, making his guy work, attacking the hoop. He had that huge dunk on Giannis in game, what was it, four? I think it was. They're all blending together. I can't remember what a game is these days. But so that's it for the Celtics. It's that there's nobody out there, I don't think, for the Celtics that has a defensive weakness. And that's the real key here. It's like Udoka, it took him probably, what, 40-odd games here to get his message across. I want everyone playing defense. I want everyone rotating, switching, being ready, closing out, boxing out for rebounds, doing your job. And that's what they do. Grant Williams, he was brilliant against Kevin Durant too in that first round. Remember a couple of times, like, he's a young guy, but he's physical, he's quick, he's got those long arms, he's got good defensive instincts. And then again, it's not like, well, let's just hide him on the offensive end. It's like, now we need you to also be ready to shoot the three if you can. So across the board, the
18.
Depth, exactly, exactly. But that just shows the mentality of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown as well. The two real superstars on this team, but they're not like, well, I'm the one who wants to score 40 and I want all the shots. They're like, if that's the game plan, they're going to give us the threes. That's what the Bucks like to do. Grant Williams is a good 3-point shooter. Let's get him those threes. And he kept firing away and, hit a good percentage, all things considered. They're 7 for 18. There were more daggers as well, though. A couple of those were just real backbreakers there for the Bucks. Yeah. So I think, again, you want one of two things. If you don't have the best player, then you want better depth. And I think that's what the Celtics had in this series. And certainly they had it against the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, absolutely. And Grant Williams, like, wise beyond his years as well. I think his mum works for NASA. Not that that's like the telltale sign for intelligence or anything, but like it clearly it's hereditary to some degree. Okay, so can we get that Lee Ellis fandom check, or at least a temporary fandom check? Like, last time we had you on, 2020, like peak pandemic, the Raptors were still in it, and you guys obviously skew Raptors on the No Dunks podcast. Right now, there were four teams left. The Raptors are not one of them. Celtics, pretty lovable. Like, can we secure your support for the rest of the season? I don't know why it means so much to me, Lee, but I'm going to ask you every time you come on.
I tell you, they're more lovable than the Paul Pierce Celtics, that's for sure. Because Paul Pierce, he embraces the villainous personality. You know, Paul Pierce wasn't a lovable guy. I mean, you know, he's an LA guy playing in Boston. I had friends in Boston who said even Bostonians don't really like Paul Pierce because he's an LA guy. I mean, we just don't. I mean, sure, he's playing for our team. But, you know, look, like, he was also one of those guys who, a brilliant player, Hall of Fame player, no question about his talent on the court, but he just came across as a bit of a, you know, a bit smug and a bit arrogant that I just didn't like. And Kevin Garnett, a little bit the same. Like, I got to know Kevin a little bit when I worked at Turner, and he was a different guy, but the same guy at the same time, like, nonstop talking. But when you can sit down and listen to some of his stories, he's a great storyteller. And he, another brilliant player, you know, no question about where their status is in terms of an NBA player, but lovable, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I saw a lot of Kevin Garnett when he would do that, you know, he'd give someone a cheap shot, then raise his hands as if he wasn't doing anything, and those sorts of things grate on you a bit. But again, I think this team is just I think Jason Tatum is easily one of my top 5 to 10 players in the league. I think he's incredible talent. He's already taken that leap from good to all-star to now, like, hey, this guy's a legit MVP candidate. And Jaylen Brown is getting there as well. I love the way that Jaylen Brown plays defense. Jaylen Brown, the weirdest thing for me is I think he's a big-time shooter, except at the free throw line. He's got the weirdest sort of clunkers at the free throw line, leaves so many of them on the front of the rim there. Mm-hmm. And then Marcus Smart, he's another one of those guys where I don't love the embellishment and the flopping, which he does, which a lot of guys do. But I also do love the fact that Marcus Smart will defend anybody and he will give his all no matter who's defending. So look, the flopping and stuff, tons of guys do that, you know, and he does do a little bit of that, but he does scrap and fight, and he's really turned himself into a reliable 3-point shooter. That was the weakness early in his career. It was like, well, you're not having Marcus Smart can play defense, but he can't shoot the ball. But he's improved that, and he's improved as a facilitator and a playmaker there for the Celtics. So I think, you know, all those things considered. And then Al Horford, I mean, like I say, Al Horford I have so much respect for, because he's just such a solid player without ever being sexy. And you know, the Atlanta Hawks down here won 60 games.
And he's a handsome man.
He's a very handsome man, yeah. They won 60 games with Budenholzer. They had 4 All-Stars that year, and I think it was 2016. And Al Horford, I mean, he was just – he was like your dad just going out there and playing, you know, just like so reliable, so consistent. So, you know, yeah. I certainly like this, you know, this group of Celtics more than I like the Paul Pierce. I mean, Ray Allen's one of my favorite of all time, so I always liked him. But Pierce and Garnett and Rondo and, you know, a few of those other ones I didn't love. But again, you certainly respect all of those guys for the careers they've had.
A completely and professionally neutral response, Lee. I respect it.
Well, look, the other thing is to be perfectly honest, like, you know, when we do a daily show, you know, with the 30 teams, and I think after a while, you just realize, like, you just can't sort of love one team more than the other because you're talking about all these teams. Yeah. And for the benefit of the show, you've got to at least bring some sort of just neutrality to it, because if you're sort of cheering for one team and you're banging the drum of one team, you end up sort of just your analysis is biased and it comes through to the fans as well. So look, I've made a million predictions that I've gotten wrong and a million that I've gotten right, and sometimes you're just sort of like, listen, that's just how it goes. Like, you can't be, but I think that the point I'm trying to make is I think it's better when you like that, because you're not making them from a point of view with a bias. You're just saying, I think this team's better. Whatever your prediction is, it's because you're coming from a position where you're not really cheering for one team over the other. Look, of the four teams remaining, it doesn't matter to me at all who wins. I'd love to see Luka win. I'd love to see Jason Tatum win. The Heat are always there. You know, Bam and Jimmy Butler. That would be a great story to see, the Jimmy Butler post-championship celebration. And then the Warriors as well. But they've also won a lot lately. So I sort of don't care, but I'll be happy for whoever wins as well.
Well, and it sounds like, you know, you're kind of speaking to, you know, the idea that when you're dealing with, like you said, a broader audience, you know, you're speaking more from the passion of the game as opposed to a particular team, where I know, like, our audience, for example, like, we're mostly talking to Celtics fans. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how this part of the pod reads with that audience, especially because I know, you know, the adoration for a guy like Ray Allen up until recently was a polarizing topic amongst those that are active listeners to our show. But I also, I appreciate the candor and the equity that you and the rest of the guys on the No Dunks team express when you guys are talking hoops. I was just listening to your pod that dropped today. And it's just nice to get a balanced take across the entire spectrum, where oftentimes, even with some of the more mainstream national media folks, there's this idea that they're trying to communicate that sort of non-bias, but it still reads through. Cause like you're saying, you can pick up on it. You can tell if there's sort of a narrative being forced into the equation there. And it's something that you guys seem to do a really nice job of avoiding and giving some solid insight along the way.
Well, look, and look, the other thing is, I've lived in Toronto and been close to the Raptors, and I live here in Atlanta now. And look, the Hawks last year in the playoffs were incredible, no doubt about it. They, you know, they led the Bucks at one point, the only team to win a game in Milwaukee, and they look great. But this year, the Hawks, not very good. You know, they just weren't good enough. And so, you know, I had no issue sort of saying that, not like trying to play the homer card or anything like that. I said they just weren't good enough. They didn't improve. But then they did start playing better. I went down to a playoff game and it was like, okay, it's good to have the Hawks sort of playing hard again. But then, of course, against the Heat, they didn't get swept, but they lost in five games there. And it was kind of like, well, they just didn't perform. So, you know, ultimately, I'll just sort of call the games as I see them. And sometimes you believe in teams, and sometimes, like the Phoenix Suns, I mean, and Chris Paul especially, I think he does deserve a championship. He's one of the greatest players of all time. But I also have said many times on our show that there are times you just want to, like, strangle him, because he still does those little punk moves where he stops in front of a defender and falls over and he flops. And it's like, why do you do that? Why do you test my love for you when you do these things where I go crazy, because you're too good. You don't need to do that. We're trying to get rid of that from the game. That sort of stuff, nobody likes. Nobody respects that. And Chris Paul, you know, he's one of the greatest point guards, one of the greatest players we've ever seen, but he still does that. So, you know, that's where I think it goes with us anyways, is like, you know, I want a guy like Chris Paul to win a championship, but if he doesn't, and especially the way they lost last night there to the Dallas Mavericks, there's no like, wow, they got screwed by the refs, or they got absolutely hammered at home and they just weren't good enough. And so that's all you can really say about it.
Well, I just wanted to play off that a little bit and kind of close out that idea on thinking about the fact that so many folks, and especially a lot of the media, have been kind of pushing this narrative that whoever wins the Bucks Celtics series is likely kind of the ideal favorite for at least getting to the championship, if not winning it. Where do you stand on that particular take? Do you agree with that? Are you seeing the Celtics as a favorite at this point, or is there another team that's kind of showing you something that, hey, you might not be noticing this, but this is something to take serious?
Well, I think, like we said, all four teams could win it easily. I think you can make a very strong case for all four of them. I mean, the Celtics are going to be in tough against the Heat here going down. The Heat had a couple of days extra rest. The old Russ versus rest argument, of course, is going to be big. If the Celtics win, see, the Heat were rusty. If the Heat win game one, well, no. Nah. They were rested. They were much better. But, you know, ultimately it comes down to, I think, you know, just to who plays better. I mean, that's not groundbreaking analysis. But if you are the thing is, if you're the
make or miss
Celtics,
league, man.
Well, exactly. I know all those cliches. I mean, but this is actually great because in years gone by, and when we were at NBA TV and it was the Cavs and the Warriors, it was like, how do we pretend that this is more exciting when the Warriors – you just, especially when they got Kevin Durant, you're like, there's no way the Cavs are going to get near them. But right now, the way the Heat have played, look, they've been very good at home, but they haven't been all that good on the road. They lost, of course, to the Atlanta Hawks, and they lost a couple there in Philadelphia where their three-point shooting fell apart. They scored 79 points in one game. So the Miami Heat, they're like the Celtics. They love to play defense. They love to get out and make it a tough game. But they're going to have times where they don't want Jimmy Butler having to score 40 points a game to win this series. They want Jimmy Butler scoring 19 or 20 and then three or four other guys contributing the same, because that's how the Heat play. They do it in a way where they have multiple guys contribute, whereas the Boston Celtics, pretty similar. They don't want Jason Tatum to have 38 every single game and work hard on the defensive end. They want Grant Williams to hit the 7 threes. They want Pritchard to give a couple off the bench. Daniel Tice, if he can give you a good 10 minutes off the bench, that's great. So, you know, who's going to win the series? I mean, the Heat have home court advantage and they are rested. Kyle Lowry's probably somewhat still injured. Ultimately, though, I think the Celtics are a better team, and I'm going to pick the Celtics to win the series, but it's not going to be over in four or five games. I think we could get six or seven again, but I think a longer series honestly favors Boston a little bit more than it does Miami, because I think those older legs of the Jimmy Butlers and the Kyle Lowry's and the PJ Tuckers, those sorts of guys could feel it a little bit more if this goes seven. So I like where Boston is. Again, even though they're going to be flying straight from a game seven down to Miami to get ready, I still think they're better and they ultimately will win the series. And then out in the West, I mean, the Warriors have been there. They've done it. Of course, they can. If they get back, they're going to be a tough out. But then we had Luka Doncic. I mean, just turned in an incredible series, and particularly there in Game 7 against the Suns. So anyone could win it. I mean, I've got the Celtics certainly coming out of the East. Will they beat Dallas or Golden State? Maybe, probably, could be. Who knows? I'll worry about that in a couple of weeks' time when we know if they make it and who they're facing.
Sure. Yeah, I was cruising the Miami Heat subreddit looking for like takes and questions for this podcast. I found a comment from a user whose username is "Dear me, your dog fits cute." our bench is deeper than theirs, they say. We need Tyler, Victor, and co. to play hard in those Pritchard/White minutes and force Udoka's hand to play Tatum, Brown, and Smart 42 minutes plus. Does Miami win the battle of the benches in this matchup, Lee, or is it a wash?
Well, again, I mean, it'll probably, over the course of, you know, let's say it goes seven games, there'll probably be three or four games where the Celtics win and three or four where the Heat win. I mean, Tyler Hero won Sixth Man of the Year. We know what he can do. And Victor Oladipo, he's gotten a fairly good run since Kyle Lowry went down with a hamstring there. Now, if Kyle Lowry comes back, Oladipo probably doesn't get as many minutes. But then you've also got Duncan Robinson, who hit 8 threes in the first playoff game against the Atlanta Hawks, but we haven't really seen him since because he just struggled since then. But you also know that Eric Spoelstra is also going to throw him out there if needed. If sometimes you just need a spark. I mentioned the 3-point shooting on the road hasn't been good for the Heat. Maybe Duncan Robinson finds it in a game or two in Boston. He just uncorks him, and that's what happens. So again, these two teams are very, very even. I don't think there's a strength that one has that can truly dominate the other. I think it's going to come down to, like, who defends Jason Tatum. It's probably going to be Jimmy Butler for a lot of it, but then you're going to have guys like Strus and Vincent get a couple of goes at him, maybe even throw a PJ Tucker at him to get him physically. But if Jason Tatum can perform the way he did against the Bucks, it ultimately won't matter because he's been so much better, I think, you know, in clutch situations. And just the confidence he has, not only taking good shots, but playmaking and trusting his teammates. And so, you know, that's the sign of evolution, I think, in a player is, can he truly trust his teammates when they need a bucket and they need a three-pointer? And we just saw what the Celtics did with Grant Williams yesterday. So I have no reason to doubt that he wouldn't be able to do that in a similar situation if they're in tough against the Heat.
What are the key components for each team in this upcoming Celtics-Heat series? Like, what are the exploitable matchups on each side?
Well, look, again, you've just seen the Celtics shut down Kevin Durant as much as you can, or certainly make life difficult for him, and then they've worn down Giannis. It figures to me that they're the two critical guys are Bam and Jimmy, and basically probably starting with Jimmy, where it's like, let's make sure he sees two bodies early on. And we almost dare those other guys to hit threes. Now, they can hit them. That's the question. You don't want them to go out there and have, a Max Strus game where he can hit five or six threes and then Tyler coming off the bench doing the same. Bam is a different character. I mean, he's very athletic. He's very fast, but he can't do the same sorts of things Giannis did. Bam's got a very decent sort of mid-range game. He can get in there and cause you some trouble, but he's not really going to spread the floor in the same way. But I think those are the two key components. PJ Tucker, we know he's going to be just plonked in the corner. His three-point shooting is still fine. I mean, he can still hit him, but he's not maybe the threat that he was a couple of years ago, certainly with the Rockets and even last year with the Bucks, where he was really good. But, you know, Tyler Hero, you know, I mean, Celtics fans know probably better than anyone because down in the bubble, he had, I think it was a 37-point game against the Heat where he was really good. And he hasn't been great in the playoffs so far, but I certainly expect him to get a lot more burn in this series. And again, Eric Spoelstra is going to trust him. He's going to say, listen, we need you to go out there and shoot and score and hit those threes and help to do what earned you the Sixth Man of the Year award. So he can definitely get you 30, 35 points in a game, but he hasn't quite done that yet. And this Celtics team is going to be ready, I think, for that. And they're absolutely going to have someone come out and defend him and try to make sure, you know, whether that is a Derek White, you know, sort of a bench guy like that, who's a good defender. He comes from the Spurs system, of course, who's going to be like, make sure you stay on this guy, because sometimes these guys, like a Tyler Hero, who's been struggling, he only needs that one game to get moving and hit some threes, and that could open him up and unlock him for the rest of the series. So, yeah, but this was great. Both teams can really defend each other super, super well. But they've also got threats from virtually everybody. Again, you're going to see a ton of threes in this series. You're going to see a ton of guys, try to light up the other team. Jaylen Brown, I think, is going to have a huge series here for the Celtics because I don't really know who's going to defend him for the Miami Heat. Again, assuming that Butler is on Tatum, Williams and Bam, obviously. Smart will be with Oladipo. So then it's a Vincent, it's a Strus, or a PJ Tucker. I love PJ, he's great, but again, Jaylen's a young athletic guy with good handles. He can get inside and he can spread you out. That's where the advantage is. It's like, if PJ's on you, bring him out and then you can attack the paint, and that could help, you know, that could really open things up inside for the Celtics.
Yeah, absolutely. PJ Tucker, I'm very happy that he wasn't on that Bucks team that we just played, because you know, it was on a knife's edge, right? Like, it came down to a game seven, and you know, the game seven wasn't particularly close, but and you mentioned that was because Giannis was worn down, but PJ Tucker, add him to the mix and it's a completely different story, let alone Chris Middleton. So he's certainly going to be a challenge for the Celtics in this series. From like just a narrative and like neurotic Celtics fan standpoint, personally worried about the Max Strus element there, because of course, and he was with the Celtics for a little while, and then we had to let him go in favor of Javonte Green, who we also had to let go in favor of, I think it might have been Enes Kanter or Enes Freedom or something like that. And so just from the like tortured fan perspective, it makes sense that Max Strus would like come back and torture us and knock us out of the playoffs here. So it's going to be interesting to see. Robert Williams and Kyle Lowry, they each have a foot in or out of the injury door. I think Kyle Lowry has just been confirmed as out in game one. So the status going forward is unclear. Which teams, you know, both teams are banged up at this point in the playoffs, Lee. Which team's injury concern is more concerning to you?
Yeah, well, look, I think Kyle Lowry has been so important for the Heat this year because he's their only real point guard. And there are times where that offense bogs down. And Jimmy can take over, you know, Tyler Herro. These guys, they've got guys who can fill in. But I think the Heat have been at their best this season when Lowry just gets that fast break going. The transition, he just gets a ball and just flings it ahead. And he can hit that three. You know, he's been a guy who's really reliable like that. He's a leader. He's experienced all those sort of veteran terms that you throw out there, and I think they really do miss him. So, you know, he's going to be huge. But then Robert Williams, I mean, his athleticism is going to be huge in this series going up against Bam, because you need, like Al Horford, I've talked about how much I love him, but you know, athletically, Robert Williams can get up and contest those shots a little bit better. You know, he can come over, he can make up a little bit more ground. He's got six more fouls as well, which you might need against the Miami Heat. You need to send that message that if anyone comes into the paint, there's going to be multiple guys contesting shots. So, look, I guess it's Lowry because he's more a veteran, he's a bit more experienced, and the Celtics do have a lot of guys, a lot of bigger bodies that can cover up for Robert Williams, I guess. But, I mean, they're both significantly impactful for their teams. And look, if Williams, I think they're probably, look, they have to keep him out as long as possible to prevent him from doing further damage, because if the Celtics go on further, they're going to need him. But at the same time, you can't afford to drop both of these games in Miami. So it's a tough dilemma there for Udoka. But you've got, you know, just veterans who I think who can cover for him, whereas the Heat, they could really, really miss Lowry a lot more significantly if that offense does bog down and they don't have anyone to sort of just get them going. And we saw him against Philadelphia. He was dragging his foot around in one game there, and it was like, I can't believe this guy's even playing. You know, I think he injured it against the Hawks originally. They brought him back earlier, and now, you know, they're taking it game by game by the sounds of it. But I wouldn't be surprised if Lowry misses at least two or three games of this series here, because a hamstring, if he comes back and he tweaks it again, he will probably be done for the remainder of the playoffs, as long as Miami's in it.
One of the things I'm wondering, just off of some of what you've kind of been talking about, is when we look at this, we've kind of seen how the Celtics have gone against two teams up until this point where the other team has had the arguably the best player, or not even arguably. I think the general overwhelming consensus is that the Nets had the best player, and obviously the Bucks had the best player. In this particular series, it would seem like if we're having that conversation, it's between Jimmy Butler and Jason Tatum. Do you see that as more of a wash, or do you see one team having the edge there? And is it going to be as impactful in this series as, well, I suppose the Celtics have kind of been dismissing the whole narrative that if you have the best player, you're going to win anyway. But would love to hear your thoughts kind of on that dynamic.
Well, look, Jimmy Butler down in the bubble, again, as you Celtics fans know, he was incredible in the entire bubble. He really did step his game up. And apart from the playoffs last year where he was an embarrassment against the Milwaukee Bucks when they got swept, he's stepped his game up again this season. And this Jimmy kind of mails in the regular season. You know, he doesn't put in all that much effort. He just goes out there and plays. He knows that it's about the playoffs. And again, so far, he's really stepped up his three-point shooting. I don't have the number here right now, but I know his three-point shooting's basically doubled in the playoffs to what it was in the regular season. He gets his body in incredible condition. He loves the fight. He loves the battle, and he loves being tested. And so far through the first two series, he has been great. Now he goes up against the Celtics. And again, how they defend him is going to be interesting, because I think they're going to want to throw a couple of bodies at him and try to employ those same tactics that Giannis faced and that Kevin Durant faced, where it's like, as soon as this guy puts a ball on the ground, he's going to feel defenders. They're going to come in and collapse and close in on him and just make him make a decision whether or not he's going to pass out or try to play, you know, one on two or one on three, whatever he's going to try to do. But just get him out of any sort of rhythm or any sort of zone where he can just lock in, because that's Jimmy at his best, where he's like, okay, tonight, if they're just going to send single coverage at me, I'm going to go at this guy. Because as good as Tatum is, as good as Brown is, Jimmy will relish that challenge. I think he'll thrive in that situation. So I think Udoka and the Celtics brain trust there is going to be like, we want this guy to be disrupted again, especially if Kyle Lowry isn't there, because then it means Strus and Vincent and whoever else have to be big the entire game. And Bam, I mean, you know, they've got other guys who can contribute, but if Jimmy is in his flow and in his groove, then I think that means the Heat are probably in a pretty strong position to win any of those games. But if they can rattle him, get him upset, get him just not comfortable, then I think it tilts towards the Celtics.
Yeah, and Lee, to your point, 23% he was shooting from three in the regular season. He's up to 36% now.
Right.
On four attempts, and he was only taking about two attempts during the regular season. So yeah, just like you said, just nearly about doubling the volume out and doubling up on his efficiency with it, which is pretty impressive. I mean, that's the kind of cat that he is, and he's shown that year after year.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. I mean, he talks about that a lot, how he takes such good care of himself to ready himself for the playoff. This is when he commits and does everything. I mean, there are games during the regular season that feels like he just says, I'm just not playing tonight because I don't want to. I'm playing Indiana on a Tuesday night. Like, no thanks. He's saving himself for the Celtics in the conference finals. His legs, his whole sort of entire commitment to his body is to go out there and just perform on the biggest stage. And he has got the track record to prove it. And, so you can't doubt him at this stage, even though, again, he's a little bit older now. And, he's got a fair few playoff miles in those legs. But he's delivered so far this season. And I think Boston are game planning to expect a pretty big series from him.
Yeah, the Jimmy Butler and the like quote unquote Heat culture thing is what freaks me out as a Celtics fan, because like if that's what we're going to lose to, it's that. But at the same time, it's compelling, and like I want to see that defeated, and I want to see that put to rest, because it is, as a non-Heat fan, kind of tiring to see that whole Jimmy Butler waving that flag, you know, for the last few years, and like this is where I belong, and you know, taunting the team.
Celtics pride is the antidote. Well, I'm telling you, it's the antidote. Celtics pride versus Heat culture. That's what's happening.
And that goes back as well to the LeBron Wade battles against Pierce and Garnett as well. I mean, they fought a couple of times in the playoffs there, and then Ray Allen, of course, leaves the Celtics. That was the big thing, like you were saying off the top. I mean, that was where the relationship between he and Pierce and Garnett kind of fell apart there, because he went and joined the Heat after what, 20
traitor
2012, I think it was. So good to see him and Kevin Garnett are buds again. So
that was nice, and hopefully that, yeah, I don't know, like see. Cosmically, like I'm getting off the analysis train here, but that, I don't know, somehow feeds into Celtic success. A quick Reddit comment here on another matchup for this series. Ammo-matic says that Time Lord is going to be huge against Bam Adebayo, exactly what we needed in 2020. Now that Rob has gotten his rest, this should be a much better matchup for him. Can't wait to see him in lockup mode again. We do have Al Horford as well that we didn't have in 2020. So I think matchup wise, I'm reminded, you know, of the Bam Adebayo block on Jason Tatum, which if I close my eyes at night, I still see that on the inside of my eyelids. So I'm hopeful that Rob Williams, can nullify that a little bit. But yeah, we've talked about the series coming up. We've talked about Game 7 against the Bucks, which was great. We do have to start wrapping up here, Lee. We've taken up enough of your time. Couple of non-Celtics related questions for you before we go. First one is just generally Ben Simmons, which as an Aussie Hoops fan is a concept, I guess, that's been gnawing away at me for a few years. I went down to those, I'm in Sydney, I went down to those Melbourne games, Boomers versus Team USA, and prior to that, we saw the tweets of Ben Simmons suited up as a Boomer ready to play, ready to contribute for his country. Didn't happen, then we go into the Olympics and some question as to whether or not Ben Simmons is going to, put on the green and gold and contribute as well. Didn't happen. And then some nefarious NBA related behavior as well from Ben Simmons, where he's not favorable and held in high regard among NBA fans, let alone Aussies. Where do you stand on that, Lee? Like you've got a pretty, you're on this sort of Aussie Hoops pedestal, let's be honest. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is repeat behavior here, because I know exactly what you're talking about with the Team USA games. He said, yep, I'm playing. And then he said, no, I'm not. I think it was the same for the Olympics. When he was traded to Brooklyn, he said, I want to play Philadelphia March 10. I'm going to play. And he didn't play. I mean, look, I understand if he was pissed off at the end of last season. They just lost the Game 7 and his dunk was kind of the tipping point. Everyone's like, why didn't you dunk? Why didn't you throw it down? And he didn't hit those free throws. He didn't score. But that was a culmination of him not doing the work. I don't know Ben. I've never met him. But all I can base my opinion and assessment is over covering the NBA for now over a decade and really being a fan for even longer, his numbers and his averages in his career so far have basically flatlined. Now, those numbers are fine, but I have never seen a star player not improve in one area of his game, whether that's defense, rebounding, three-point shooting, playmaking, whatever it is. Every player improves because they go and do the work in the offseason. To me, he just doesn't do that work. And he survives off his incredible athleticism and his talent, and that gets you to a certain point. I mean, he's a three-time All-Star. He's runner-up Defensive Player of the Year. So he's doing incredibly well. But to me, and it's funny because I had somebody who actually does work very, very closely to him and his camp saying he basically doesn't work hard in the summer. He's way more interested in driving his Ferraris and going to parties and being seen with LeBron and doing things like that. Yeah, and so this the person who told me was saying, like, coaches and teammates and players have said, like, you've got to get in the gym. You've got to get in the gym. And he's kind of like, I don't really want to do that. So this is like, it's funny, you know, being in the position I've been in now, you know, with NBA TV, you do get to know a few people over time. And some people are just saying, like, everyone in the organization is sort of like shrugging their shoulders by saying, like, why isn't he doing this? Why can't he take criticism? Why doesn't he go and want to work on his game? Because he's kind of saying, well, I don't need to, you know, I'm good enough as it is. But everyone else goes out there and just works and works, especially when you have an enormous deficiency like he does. Because the other thing is when he went to Brooklyn, a person also told me there, he got there and he told us as well. Another thing, like you're saying off the top there, he's like, he was keeping himself in shape, ready with, so if he got traded, he could play. He got to Brooklyn and apparently the Brooklyn Nets front office and the staff and the coaching staff were like, what has this guy been doing? Because he's not ready. He hasn't been shooting. He hasn't been doing anything. He's not been like the scrimmaging and stuff that we heard he was doing. He obviously wasn't doing that, certainly not at an intense level. It was like he hadn't been playing basketball at all for months. Wow. Now, again, it's speculative and I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But
of course,
the person who told me was like, is like, people are just looking around at the Nets front office and just going like, this guy's just nowhere near ready to play in the NBA. And it's not like he's coming off an injury. He didn't play in Philadelphia because he didn't want to. Daryl Morey and the Sixers wanted him to play. He didn't want to. He couldn't get over the fact that he felt, you know, that they threw him under the bus. They did to some point, but certainly not worse than we've seen from other star players over the years. So I think, I mean, he's playing himself out of the league. And I just don't understand why there isn't somebody in his camp who's able to get through to him and say, people only care about how hard you work and the effort you put in off the court to improve your game, which he just hasn't shown any signs of doing that. Because again, the stats tell you that he's not improving because he's not trying.
That's the thing. Like, and that's what makes it so frustrating is that he has the platform to still pivot and succeed from this point. And you know, I hate on him externally, but internally I am rooting for him. And I hope that he still does turn it around because he's obviously a very talented player. He is Australian. We love him on the Boomers, especially with Ingles and Patty Mills getting a little bit older. So hopefully he still has it within him to turn it around. So some interesting stuff there. I've got one more non-Celtics related question for you, Lee, and then Jay's going to wrap it up with a Celtics question. This is more on a personal level. No Dunks Instagram, you know, they've been posting some clips of you guys playing pickup ball now that the pandemic is like kind of over. And pretty impressive stuff, Lee, got to say. Like, you know, watch a lot of basketball. You got some moves. You got some good shooting there. I am getting into sort of the later stages of my 30s, and I play in a couple of sort of rec leagues here in Sydney. And a lot of 18 sort of to 25-year-olds, a lot of people blowing by me now, a lot of people that I can't defend. Do you have any tips for a sort of a maturing hooper like myself to sort of elongate their very casual basketball career?
Yeah, well, the truth is, you know, I play once a week and it takes me a few days to recover and then a few days to prepare and then Wednesday's around again. Yeah. But honestly, like I'm no a dietitian or nutritionist, but I really did cut out meat basically from my diet and no French fries and things like that because you just feel all those things around your midsection. So when you sort of get on the more plant-based diet, and all that stuff, you find that you just lose a bit more weight and you don't carry it around. And the more you can, better you can move around on the court, the just better you play. As far as getting blown by 20, right, like you're gone. There's nothing you can do about that. And I can't blow by anyone off the dribble anymore. So, you know, you've got to develop the three-point game or at least a long two game there. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the in terms of the physical side, I've really found I started going plant-based about 5 years ago. And it's just it's an incredible way to preserve your body, I think, because you just recover a little bit better. The weight is, again, you just don't carry around as much of it. So, you know, if you can focus on those sorts of things and see if it makes a difference. But look, I wake up some of those Thursdays and I'm just like, oh my God, I didn't even know I had a part of my body that's just hurting here. But you know, at this point, I'm just taking it week by week. And as long as I can get out there and play and have fun, that's all that counts.
Hopefully, so BB just, can put out a plant-based beer at some point for me.
That's the other thing is I stopped drinking beer like at home. Like if I go with friends or whatever, I have a couple of beers then. But I was like, oh my God, it's a tough thing to sacrifice. But I'm like, you'd notice the difference. I just feel it a little bit better. And you know, yep. I think again, as you get older, I'm nearly 46. You're like, wow. These things, when you're a kid, when you're 20, you eat McDonald's, you go out all night, you drink, you party, you wake up and you play and you're fine. Yep. Now it's kind of like, all right, I got to start preparing for like the game in 2 weeks' time by what I'm doing tonight and make sure I'm disciplined until that game starts.
For sure.
I can relate in some regards, but then there's other aspects of like, I never had any advantages when I was in my early 20s because I was very problematic with the way that I related with food and used food as a coping mechanism. So it wasn't until I got into like my low 30s that I actually started focusing on my health and nutrition. And so then I found that I was able to, like you're saying, like once you actually do get that honed in, you can start doing things on the court that like maybe you only remember you could do back when you were a kid, or you just you didn't even know, because by the time you had adult physiology, you had gotten so far gone. Like I'm only 5'8". And at my peak, I was like 280 pounds. Like it was a problem.
Whoa.
Yeah. And, but did a shift, you know, small, gradual, sustainable changes over time, and dropped like a buck 20. I was down to like 160 at my best. I put on a little COVID weight back on. So I got some work. I got some work to do before I take on Jay King. Cause I think him and I got to have a one-on-one one of these days. But I remember getting into the gym and play, like Ben's saying, like playing with some younger kids, because you know they're all enthusiastic, they're about it, and like I'm in shape all of a sudden, I'm feeling like I'm ready to go. And here's the thing: you start playing, right? And you don't. Time goes away. It's like you're in a casino, and all the windows are just blocked. You can't even see daylight anymore. And like by the time I regain consciousness and realize that I've been playing probably longer than I should, it's like 4 hours later. The college kids are like asking to go again. And I'm like, I got I got a work thing that I got to do. And then I go home to a bathtub full of Epsom salt and like as much ice as I can make in a 2 hour period. Like you said, it takes days afterwards. It takes days to come back. Oh
yeah. No, but I think as well, the COVID situation also, It was good in the sense I was like, oh man, I sort of stopped playing, and I was, you know, playing once every, you take it for granted. You think it's always going to be there. And then I didn't play for, you know, 2 years solid because of COVID. And then when they opened up the gym again, I played a little bit outdoor, you know, it was outdoor, whatever. But then when they opened the gym up again, I was like, all right, I'm getting back into this. I enjoy it, you know, and we've got a pretty good group actually on Wednesday nights. You know, not too much fight. There's always a little bit of fight, and there's always a few guys who want to fight over if it was a travel or a double dribble or something like that. But I'm just enjoying playing again. And Trey and I have been playing, and it's funny because we do record each other when we're playing. But last week, Trey and I were on the same team for like, we won 6 games in a row.
Wow.
And we were both saying afterwards, like, we had some really nice plays to each other, but we had no one to shoot it. So they've gone to waste. But it was so much fun. I mean, when you play with friends as well like that and you have some wins, I mean, it just makes it great. So unfortunately, we got a couple of highlights up, but there was some that will just never see the light of day, unfortunately.
So the last thing that
that's a takeaway. Sorry, go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, the last thing I'd really love to kind of and give both of your takes on this, especially because you both have, I think, a different perspective on how you'd make this decision. So there was a post put up in the sub today by user Lightning Fast, and it was just a poll question, just asking what was your favorite game from the Bucks series. And so the options that were given were Game 2, the JB explosion in that first half. Game 4, which is the Al Horford game. Game 6, where Tatum does the superstar thing. Game 7, where Grant Williams, a.k.a. the Batman, you know, comes in and just rains hellfire from 3. Are any of those the standouts, you know, for you? Or is there anything else from that series that stands out as, like, the piece of it that if you could go back and kind of watch again, you'd want to see it again?
Well, I think for me it was game one because I picked the Celtics to win and I thought it's going to be tough without Middleton. And the fact that Giannis was able to play the way he did, it was like, all right, we got a series now. This is on, because the Celtics had just come off a very convincing victory, but you're like, maybe that was too easy against the Nets. Now they're in for a battle. And so, you know, if you look back historically, I don't have the percentages here, but for the team to win the first game on the road and to have won game 5 on the road and be up 3-2, the chances of you winning the series must be like 97% from there. Yeah. So the Celtics, and again, they were down, what, doubled? They were down 14 or 15 in game 6 there before Tatum took over. So, you know, historically speaking, we haven't really seen much of that before. I mean, I can't think of a series off the top of my head where you've had that, where it's like, wow, they blew it. They didn't blow. Game 5 was an incredible game there where Giannis hits a 3, Drew has the 2 incredible steals. They're going home. It's like they're going to close this out, surely. And Boston comes back and wins in 7. So, but again, I think that starts in game 1 because, you know, because it was like Giannis from the start, it was like, man, maybe Giannis is going to do this, you know, almost by himself without Middleton and Drew Holiday there playing. So I think that's great. It set the tone for a great series. I don't remember one game that was like, I mean, game 2 kind of was a bit of a stinker there because the Celtics blew them out in the end. And even game 7, I mean, the second half wasn't all that exciting. Unfortunately, we didn't come down to the wire, but I think otherwise.
We got a Neesmith bucket. Game,
did he get a bucket? Did he? I think I tuned out by then. Yeah, I know Stauskas came on and Cornette came on too, didn't he? I think if I see Luke Cornette, that's I'm doing something else. I'm not watching the rest of that game.
Doka was playing all the hits at the end there. It was great for us, Celtics fans. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny, Lee. Like different perspectives. Like your favorite memories from this series are my most painful memories. Like game 1, like coming out of the Nets series, I was like, well, we might sweep the Bucks. Like we're that good. We just like knocked out Durant and Kyrie in 4 games. And then to lose that game was a big wake up call for everybody. My two takeaway games, Jay. Two takeaway memories. That Al Horford blow by and dunk. Like talking about 35-year-olds. Blowing by younger guys. That was a huge day for 35-year-olds everywhere. I'm obviously 35. Al Horford blowing by Giannis and dunking on him. And then the rare Al Horford emotional outburst. That was fantastic. And then game 6. Got to call out game 6, which that's a star maker for Tatum to come in like that and score 46 and to overcome the deficit and to survive elimination on the road against the best player in the world. There's nothing, you couldn't ask for anything better than that as a Tatum fan or a Celtics fan, and then to go on to win the series. So great stuff there. Lee, we've kept you for almost an hour here, so we're going to wrap up. Look, I would plug your podcast, but honestly, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably very much aware of The Athletic and the Nuggets podcast. Lee Ellis, thank you so much for coming on for episode 200. We will get you back on for episode 300. We will continue to wear you down and try and make you a Celtics fan, at least for a series at a time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Ben has offered prize money if one of us can help make it happen.
Yeah, that's
right. We're calling it Fangate.
I said before, you know, you guys done a fantastic job because most podcasts just simply don't even, they don't get to 10 shows. And I've said, I do get a lot of people ask me to go on their podcast and I'm like, how many have you done? And if I see they've done 2 or 5, I'm like, all right, if you get to a milestone like the hundreds, I'll keep coming on. So congratulations to you guys. I know it's tough. And, you know, if you're balancing jobs and lives and things like that. So credit to you guys for the hard work and It's been fun chat talking to you guys. So not a Celtic Beantown boy just yet, but maybe in 100 episodes we'll see.
There's time.
Appreciate it, mate.
Cheers, guys.